This week on the BOAG World Show, we take a closer look at responsive design and identify 10 things you should consider when going responsive. To BOAGworld.com, the podcast for all those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis, and indeed anyone else that fancies listening to it, really. Because, I mean, students listen to it, and I know a lot of people that don't work in web design at all listen to it, which confuses the crap out of me. Yeah, seriously. Lots of people.
Because we're so entertaining.
That have got nothing better to do with their lives, I think, basically. So,
although you've made my day there, Paul.
Have I?
Yes.
Why? Because that justifies you talking about cricket.
Yeah, well, or anything. Just
anything,
being here.
Anything that you want to talk about.
No, but it's great. People listen to this who aren't in web design.
Oh, people listen to any old shit.
Yeah, right, okay.
They've got nothing. If you're on a commute, if you're driving like an hour and a half to work every day, you'll listen to literally anything to make the time pass faster.
Do you know, I never listen to anything on my commute on the way in.
Well, that's because your commute isn't that long, is it? How long's your commute?
35, 40 minutes.
What, do you just sit there and dribble then, an old man?
I kind of chat to myself, really. I listen to the radio and music on my way home every time.
Right.
I'll just check on the headlines and then I'll put a CD on or something like that. But on the way in, nothing, ever.
It's the only way you can be sure of intelligent conversation, isn't it? Just to talk to yourself.
where my thoughts, so you know, I bring them together.
I do know what you mean. Sometimes I do just kind of sit.
Yeah, I'd love that. I quite like driving as well. It's a nice drive. So
yeah, that's true. You do have quite a nice drive. Well, no, it's not. It's mainly on the M3.
Well, that bit's rubbish. But no, once I peel off the M3 and start going down through the countryside towards Winchester, it's very, very nice.
Okay, you cut through the countryside to Winchester. Fair enough.
Yeah, I don't go all the way down to the Winchester Junction. This is really interesting for
this
people
is fascinating.
Who don't even live in Hampshire.
Or in Britain.
Let alone. But, Paul, don't go all the way down the M3 to the Winchester Junction because you'll get stuck in awful traffic.
Okay, that's useful to know.
You need to take the A33.
Top tip from Marcus today.
Yes, there you go.
So I listen to audiobooks. So we really should have Audible as a sponsor because I could literally kind of mention hundreds of audiobooks. So that's what I do. Do you know I never listen to podcasts? So basically, both of us make a podcast and neither of us listen to any.
I don't listen to any podcast. I don't think I've ever listened to a podcast all the way through. Not even ones where I've been guests on other ones.
That's terrible.
I get bored.
Yeah, they are. A lot of them are boring. I don't know why people listen.
I'd much rather listen to music.
Yeah, exactly.
or a story, I suppose, although I'm kind of keener on reading stories, but yeah.
It's a good way of getting through stories, because I never seem to have enough time at home for stories. There's always
bedtime
something
story
to
time.
Do.
I always think bedtime, story time.
Bedtime.
Yeah.
That is true, sitting in bed at night reading a story. I've started doing that more, so I usually have two on the go. I have one which is an audible story and one that's a reading one.
Hmm. I have different books for different rooms in the house.
You don't.
I do.
That is. I bet you have one for the toilet.
Of course.
You?
That's when I say rooms. That's the room I'm referring to, or rooms I'm referring
right.
to.
See, with audiobooks, the good thing to listen to when you're in the car driving is work related audiobooks. If there's certain kind of work things you want to get through,
yeah. Which is why people listen to this, I guess.
What, because they learn stuff?
Well,
never.
Certainly not on this bit of the show.
No. But a lot of people fast forward past this bit, don't they?
But as you've said, people who aren't in web design listen to it. Made my day, that has.
It's a, and a lot of people, the number of people that, so I've been to conferences, a lot of conferences recently, as you may know.
Yes.
And the number of people that come up to me and say, well, I mentioned this last week, I used to listen to your podcast.
Yes.
And actually, and that's a lot of people go on then to say, and that's how I got into web design professionally.
Wow.
So they were either students or they were just kind of fiddling around with web design in the evening. And then that's how they got in. I'd be really interested to see if anybody still does that. If you do, tweet us.
Yes.
At Boag World. Don't even, I used to say email us, but I know nobody will do that. Takes far, email feels like far too much work.
See, you've got a thing about email. Email's just another form of communication. Quite a useful one.
Yeah. It's all right. You have to pick through all the crap.
Well, surely this is exactly the same, more so on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Well, not with mentions. You don't get too much spam. You get a little bit, but not like you do with email.
I don't get that much spam. I've just spilt tea everywhere.
That's because you're not as popular as me.
What, I spilt tea?
Yeah. You know what I meant.
Yes, it's true.
No, you just don't. You don't sign up for as many stupid gadgets and things. And oh, look, there's a shiny new bit of software. Let me give them all my personal information.
Yes. No, I don't do that.
You're sensible, basically.
Mostly.
Have you managed to clear up your tea? Do we need to stop recording?
No, but we will stop recording in a minute, and I'll deal with it then. It's not gone all over a keyboard or anything.
So it's not like dripping on your legs.
No, it's just on the desk.
Okay,
I can deal with it in a few minutes.
Can you take a photograph and post it to Twitter?
No,
because I'm sure people will be interested.
No,
that's why. If you're a proper Instagrammer, that's what you do.
But I'm not.
Yeah, I see.
I find that this is an interesting thing. Well, no, is it? I found it quite interesting that I am taking probably, I don't know, 100 times more photographs than I was 20 years ago.
Yes.
To the point of they've become a different thing. They're like almost like a diary now.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people do that. That's not news, Marcus.
No, but without or the realization that it is a diary is interesting to me. It's kind of like I've always thought of, right, you must look at your photographs and, you know, categorize them and put them in this pot, and the good ones you print and put on the wall. They've stopped being that thing.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, so all right, but I'm catching up, Paul, you know.
I bet you're also one of these people that I can't remember what I've talked about on the show. I don't care anymore. My brain's like mush. Did I talk to you about the definition of a digital native compared to a pre-digital person with email?
It rings a bell.
Oh, right.
Go on then. I can't remember.
So if you start your email with hello, name of person, and end it with signed off, you know, Paul or whatever, then apparently that means you're old school, because you're basically treating email like letters, while the young, hip, trendy kids treat it more like a Facebook chat, and they won't. I mean, if you think about it, it makes sense. I mean, why do you sign off your email? It's not like they don't know who it's from by the email address.
It's polite, Paul.
See, yeah. But the world's not polite anymore.
It can be. We just have to try a little bit harder.
Yeah, no, I can't be bothered with all that. So I never say hello, Marcus, and I never sign off Paul.
Yeah, you do.
Do I?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, I thought I was hip and trendy.
No, you're not.
Oh, bollocks. Anyway, what are we talking about on this week's show, Marcus?
Yours sincerely, Paul, whatever your middle name is, Boag.
Yeah, I'm very formal.
Very formal.
Yours sincerely, Paul Alexander Boag.
There you go.
There. And I have scanned in my signature as well.
What?
Well, you sign it, don't you? So you have to have a scanned in signature at the bottom of the emails. That's right.
That's going too far.
Is that a step too far?
Yeah, that's a step too far. Just sort of like thanks, Marcus. That's okay, I think.
I used to put cheers.
Yeah, sometimes I do. Depends who I'm talking to.
Cheers just sounds crap. I'm not doing it anymore because I want to pretend to be hip and trendy.
Okay.
So we're talking, this week.
What are we talking about, Paul?
We're talking about responsive design. Because it's just not enough been written on that subject.
not many people know about
nobody,
it. Or anything like
nobody
that.
Mentions it. It never comes up. So I think the kind of the idea of this week's show is that a lot of clients come to you and say, yeah, we want our site to be responsive. But there's responsive and then there's responsive, if you know what I mean.
I do.
So there's the kind of, you can make a site responsive quite easily, but actually to do it well needs quite a lot of thought and quite a lot of effort. So we're going to kind of look at the, we're not going to talk about how to make your site responsive in the kind of using CSS breakpoints and all that kind of stuff. But rather we're going to talk about the kind of things you need to consider that kind of go around responsiveness, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, we've recently worked with a client where we just did the design work and we delivered responsive templates. And I've got to be quite careful here. basically, the developer in question claimed to develop responsive websites, but they weren't really.
Right.
And it was kind of like they broke on lots of different widths and all that kind of thing.
Ooh.
So it was, yeah. So
I
yeah.
suspect that will come up later as we talk about it, because that's one of the points.
But as a warning, yes, ask what people mean, I guess. To
absolutely.
Owners.
And kind of dig to the bottom of how far you're going to go. And I'm not saying, see, what gets up my nose sometimes when we talk about, well, people write about responsive these days, is they do make it amazingly complicated and say, oh, you need to do all of these things to do it properly. And we do that all the time, make things more and more complicated. I've no problem with cheap, quick and dirty responsiveness if that's all you can afford and if that's the right decision for your particular project. But I guess what I'm getting at with this show is to make sure you're comparing apples with apples. You know, that what are you really offering with responsiveness? Is it going to be the same level of responsiveness that someone else might offer, for example? So that's what we're going to get into.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, let's kick off then with my number one piece of advice about building sites responsively. All right, so Marcus, you've mopped up now, have you? I think the listener needs an update in your mopping.
What I didn't do earlier, though, was talk about the tea that I'm drinking, which is actually really, really nice.
We just said we're starting the show. Off you go again. What brand of tea is it? Americans like, you know, I think they're cultured if they drink tea. So,
well it's a brand. I don't know if you can buy it in the States. Maybe you can. A brand called Tea Pigs.
What?
Tea Pigs. Yeah, don't ask me why, but it's really nice tea. This particular one is called the New Earl Grey, and it's gorgeous. It's got lavender in it and lime and all that kind of stuff, as well as real tea. I can't stand just herbal tea. Ick.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But anyway, really nice. So, yes, little advert. I wonder if I can get some, we can be sponsored by Tea Pigs, because they're bloody expensive.
Well, I'll tell you what, Dig.com for a while was sponsored. When Dignation, the Dignation podcast was around,
yeah.
It might still be around for all I know. I know that they were sponsored by a tea company for a while, so there you go.
There you go.
So, but we don't do sponsorship.
No, we don't. Well, maybe we should consider it for certain things.
For if we really, really, really like it.
Yeah.
But then the trouble is, we might be approached by somebody who we know that does something that wants to advertise on the show, and we don't really, really like it, and we'd have to piss them off.
Yeah, how could you get around that?
Yeah, that's
that would be tricky.
It's a can of worms. I just think
we'd have to lie, Paul. Lying. That's how we get around it.
Well, how do you... Oh, we've got... Our slots are full.
Yeah, exactly. We'd love to, but yeah, we're booked up for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think they might notice if they listen, of course. Nobody listens, so it doesn't ring back. Can we get on with the show?
We can. The show that's ringing a bell with me.
What do you mean, ringing a bell?
I've just read the notes for today, and I could have sworn we'd done this show before.
Marcus, we've done every show before. That doesn't really narrow it down. Seriously, okay. You think we've done this?
I don't know. I'm going to have a little...
I don't care. That's my response.
Okay.
I just don't care. All right, so number one is start with your content hierarchy. Now, if I was particularly pretentious, I would say build content first.
Yeah.
But I've got a bit of a problem with the idea of building content first. Not as a principle, but as an interpretation of that. That I think when you talk about building content first, a lot of people think they have to kind of, when they're perhaps mobile first, they think that they have to kind of start with a really stripped down minimalistic version. And then, you know, then they do the mobile version, and then they build up to the tablet version, and up to the kind of desktop version, and then the TV version or whatever.
And start the watch now, Paul. Come on, get it right.
Oh, yeah, start with the watch. God, that would be fun. But actually, I don't think that you necessarily need to do it like that. For me, content first means really kind of, A, getting the content that you're going to be working with to start with, rather than at the end of the process, I would just pour the content in afterwards.
Yep.
And B, to establish your content hierarchy. In other words, what's the most important thing, second thing, and so on. Because when you linearize the content, which you normally do when you go mobile, then you want to know what that hierarchy is going to be. And you need to think about that from the very beginning rather than think of it as a kind of afterthought.
This seems so logical, doesn't it? But it's some organizations don't actually know how to prioritize their content. And no matter how much you bully them, I'm speaking from experience here, it's almost impossible to get that priority down. But as you quite rightly point out, if you're writing code or you're designing a linear site, you have to make those choices.
I think, argument I always take with clients is that you are prioritizing content, whether you're aware of it or not. You know, by even on a normal website, if you list something alphabetically, there's still something at the beginning of the list. Mm. So it has been prioritized. The other attitude I've got these days, I'm becoming increasingly bullshit about all of this, is if the client won't do it, I will.
Well, that's what happens.
And, we just make the decision for them. Mm. And, you know, that's the way it goes. But I think you need to think that through and make that decision before you start. Now, I'm perfectly okay if somebody, and I'll get in trouble for this, especially with Dan, but I'm perfectly okay if a designer wants to start by, you know, designing the desktop version and then do the mobile version. I really don't care, as long as you've kind of thought through the prioritization of the content so that as you collapse things down into a mobile, you know, to the mobile look, you know how you're going to be linearizing it from the beginning. I think it only becomes a problem when you start showing clients a desktop when you haven't thought about the mobile version and so on. So there, you know, I think we can sometimes as a community be a bit, what's the word, dogmatic. Yes. Over this kind of stuff. And people work however you're comfortable, but make sure that you are, you know, aware of that if you start with your desktop without first considering your content hierarchy, then you're going to get yourself into all kinds of problems, irrespective of whether you're building responsively or not. You know, the first thing you need to do is decide, what do you want people to look at first? You know, it's basic stuff, but it applies particularly to responsive design. Okay, so that's number one. Let's move on to number two. One of the rookie mistakes that people make when it comes to responsive design is to presume context. So, somebody's using a mobile device, therefore they are on a train or at a bus stop or something like that, or they're out and about. Therefore, the main thing they're now going to want is contact details, and, they won't need this part of the site because, you know, that's not going to be relevant to that context.
Not true, is it, Paul?
It's not true. No, absolutely. In fact,
particularly, more so, it's becoming not true.
Yeah. You know, research done by Google, and I'll see if I can find a link for the show notes, says that most people are using, you know, two or three devices at the same time these days. You know, you can be sitting watching TV, fiddling with your mobile phone. That's not uncommon. Mm. And a lot of the times, there can be all kinds of different contexts for devices that don't make sense. You could be on a train using your laptop. you know, you could be sitting, you know, in a an airport lounge using your laptop. Equally, you could be using your mobile device at home. There's no way that you can know what the context is. And so you can't presume it, basically. Okay, talking of which, the other thing you can't presume, I'm going to skip around a little bit from the show notes because it kind of fits better, Marcus, just to warn you.
Okay, you're confusing me already, obviously.
I have confused you. is to consider bandwidth. You can't presume bandwidth either. So just because someone's using a laptop doesn't mean they're not tethered to their mobile phone. And so using a 3G connection. Equally, if somebody's on a mobile device, A, they could be on a 4G connection, which is blindingly fast, or alternatively, they could be at home on Wi-Fi. It's perfectly possible that somebody with Wi-Fi is on really rubbish dial-up, you know, or, you know, dial-up or slow broadband, while someone on mobile could be on super fast 4G. So
I was watching the Gadget show last night. I don't normally watch it, but I was flicking about. Mm-hmm. And there was a report from South Korea where a guy was talking about 4G, because they developed 4G in South Korea. Yeah. And he was saying you can download a movie in a taxi out there in 40 seconds, an HD movie in 40 seconds.
Wow.
And they're developing 5G at the moment, where you'll be able to do it in a second.
That's just showing off, isn't it?
1 second for an HD movie. I'll be a phone. That's pretty unbelievable.
But, it show you the kind of future of broadband and things like that. That actually, you have to wonder whether most people will end up with any kind of hardline connection going into their house whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to a presentation tomorrow. I'm giving a presentation tomorrow, and I'm not bothered about whether their Wi-Fi works or not. It's in the middle of London, so I can use 4G.
Absolutely. And then, of course, you've got developing countries like Africa, where, you know, they skipped the hard line entirely and gone straight to mobile. They've not got a hard line network. They just rely on mobile and cell towers and that kind of thing. And so that is how people get online. But you do need to think about bandwidth. That doesn't mean that bandwidth is something you can just ignore. You just can't presume about it. So when you're working responsively, you do need to think quite heavily about, you know, well, what if someone is on a rubbish connection? How are we going to deal with that? And of course, that's a particular issue when it comes to things like imagery. You know, are you going to deliver different images to different devices in order to optimize the experience in terms of bandwidth? But it's not just even bandwidth. You've got, images. You've got to think about typography and the amount of typography you're downloading. Web fonts can get really quite big, let alone all the other bits and bobs that end up on our site and the badly optimized calls to the server and all of those kinds of things. So we do need to think a lot about bandwidth when you're building responsively, because some users will be using crap connections. In fact, to be honest, you could almost take out the word responsively from that. You need to consider bandwidth full stop. Yep. You know, whether your site is responsive or not, because you don't know what connection people are going to be using. And more than that, obviously, these days, Google is pushing hard for you to optimize the speed of your site, and it is beginning to affect search engine optimization as well, which is great, because that finally gets the client to give a shit about things like performance, which they don't normally do. So that is our number three. Consider bandwidth, but don't presume. This is probably the biggest one.
Okay.
Because this is if Dan was here, I'm channeling Dan now, all right? But okay, with considerably less swear words, which is think responsive from the beginning. Things get very, very complicated if you're not thinking about how you're going to build the site responsively right from the very outset of the project. It is possible to retrofit a site and make it responsive, but it will be a painful and expensive process. It is much, much better to consider it as you build the website, and it's much, much better still to consider it from the very moment you begin the project. You know, and to be talking about it responsively from the very beginning, especially when you're showing stuff to the client and getting the client to sign off stuff, make sure that you're showing them something that does scale and does adapt to different device sizes from the very beginning. Because otherwise you're going to get into all kinds of issues later on of client expectations, and simply the amount of time it takes to go, okay, so we've got the desktop version, now what we're going to do to make it work on a mobile device. You know, if you design it, so the mobile version and the desktop version simultaneously, you will come up with a design that adapts much better than if you build the desktop version and then go, how are we going to scale it down? Because, yeah, it's just the way of it, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, I mean, the right-hand column is an excellent example of that, or any columns. But let's say you've done a design where you've prioritized, some of the higher priority items have gone into your right-hand column, and you haven't thought about where that right-hand column is going to go, chances are to the bottom of the page, you're going to run into problems with your client.
Yeah, absolutely, because the client's not going to be happy, perhaps with the positioning, oh, that's right below the fold, or whatever they happen to say. But also, I think, sometimes you can get into situations where... because of the order of the HTML, it kind of to some degree still defines the order that things are linearized in. So it may mean having to rebuild some of the pages if you decide that you don't want that right hand column to go at the bottom, but you want it to go at the top or whatever else. So there are lots of little complexities that need to be considered, and it's so much easier if you do it right from the beginning. Okay, let's move on to number five. Number five is to design for multiple input devices. We tend to, when we think responsively, we tend to focus on multiple screen sizes. But that's not the only difference between devices these days. You have, obviously, the mouse and the keyboard. You have the keyboard and the touchpad. You have touch screen devices. You have devices with those little nipples. Do you remember the little nipple?
Oh, yes.
You still get nipple devices, which always amuses me, brings out my childishness. Then, of course, you've got assertive technologies. You've got, you know, devices controlled by braille readers, screen readers. You get... some the different types of touch devices as well, some of which are kind of the iPhone type of device where, you know, which is quite a responsive touch screen, you know, which allow multiple touch points at the same time. And then you get the kind of older generation of touch devices, the ones that you need to touch with your fingertip in order, you know, the actual nail of the finger to get it to respond, and it can only cope with one touch at a time. You know, so there are all these different, and then of course there's game consoles as well, which have got their, you know, their own controllers, and keyboard input is really difficult with those. And then, and now of course we've got the, you know, the Apple Watch with its little crown thing, that we've got to consider as well. So there are all these different input devices. So we can't just focus on screen size, we have to consider all these things. And at the most basic level, that means things like, for a touch device, making sure that Marcus's podgy fingers can click on an individual link. Well, you said this yourself.
I'm not true.
You know, I'm not being accusing. You just have podgy fingers.
I do, it's true.
Yeah, which is amazing that you can play the guitar as well as you can. Surely, well, surely podgy sausage fingers cause problems.
They're not that bad, but yes, they aren't long, elegant fingers.
No, I have pianist's fingers, except I can't play the piano.
Really?
Yes. Or indeed do anything musical whatsoever.
Have you ever tried?
Oh, only at school. I can't even clap in time. I'm not kidding you. I really can't. So, yeah, I've got no sense of rhythm at all. It's to my eternal regret. You know, I'm intensely good at so many things, but that's just not one of them.
Of course, you can't be good at everything.
No, I mean, it would just, you know, it would make people like you feel inferior.
It wouldn't be fair on the rest
no,
of us,
it wouldn't.
Would it?
No, I'm not musical. Anyway, how did we get onto that? Oh, yeah, podgy fingers. And then, of course, there's the whole issue of if they're using the device one-handed, you know, whether you can reach all of the... you know, the icons on the screen. I'm looking at you, iPhone 6 Plus. So there are lots of different kind of things to consider with your multiple input devices beyond, you know, beyond your screen, really. Hmm. Okay, let's move on to number six. Okay, number six is kind of related in some ways to this idea that it's more than just screen size. And this one is that we also need to be designing for different pixel density as well. So, for example, a growing number of devices these days have got retina screens on them. Mm-hmm. And that can make quite a big difference in terms of imagery that we use and typography and those kinds of things. So, one of the kind of classic mistakes is, oh, it's a mobile device. Chances are they're on, you know, a poor connection. Therefore, let's give them a smaller image. But of course, if you give them a small image, you know, there is a good probability that that mobile device these days has got a retina screen, and so that image ends up looking fuzzy and a bit shit. Mm. So you've kind of got to think about the pixel density when you work on it. Now, you might be going, well, we don't know what the pixel density is, and I'm sure that there's some fancy way that you can work it out using JavaScript or some advanced CSS technique that's not supported by anything, but at the most basic level, what you can do is use vector-based stuff as much as possible. So you can use, you know, things like SVG, and you can use font placement to use do iconography and that kind of stuff. And then obviously you can, you know, do stuff with typography itself. So there are lots of ways of kind of reducing the problem, even if you can't get rid of it entirely. And of course, if you're using things like SVG and you're using fonts for iconography, then you're also saving a hell of a lot of bandwidth as well, and that has an advantage in itself. So it really is worth thinking about the pixel density of the screens and try and accommodate different pixel densities. Another important thing when it comes to some devices is to think about performance. So I'm not just talking about download time here. I'm also talking about page rendering and the performance of a page. So this is typically dictated by JavaScript that you have on the page. So if you're, say, creating a website for an older device like an iPhone 3 or something like that, and yes, there are still a lot of those around. My dad has just got iPhone 3, so, you know, they do exist. Those will chug when it's trying to render JavaScript. Also the operating system as well, because these come with pre-installed browsers, a lot of them, and those browsers aren't necessarily always the best browsers in the world, and so they don't necessarily pass JavaScript particularly well. So, you know, all of these kinds of things, from mobile phones to some of the cheaper tablets out there to even some of the kind of games consoles, don't necessarily have the best JavaScript performance in the world. And so that can make your sites feel really sluggish if you're not careful. Now, obviously, that none of these are absolutes. They are a trade-off. You know, you might go, well, screw it, my web application needs a lot of JavaScript, and anyway, 90% of the people using my application are using it on a fast desktop computer. In which case, fine, you know, ignore this one. But just be aware of it that if you are trying to kind of reach a bigger audience, then you do need to consider JavaScript performance as well. I've noticed you've gone very quiet, Marcus. You're looking up jokes.
I was, but I wasn't during that section, and I realised that I didn't actually say anything at all about JavaScript performance.
I don't imagine it's really something you've got a huge amount to say on, is it really?
No, but I was sort of feeling like maybe I ought to try something, but I didn't have anything to say.
So what value do you bring to the show again? Just remind me.
Jokes.
Sorry. Jokes, oh yeah.
Really high
quality jokes. And your likability.
Obviously, yes.
Because, you know, I'm so obnoxious and egotistical.
But you're good at everything, Paul.
And I'm good at everything.
Yes.
Except social skills, apparently.
and music.
Yes, and music, yeah. So number eight, adapting your typography. This is one of the things I love most about our new Headscape Boag World site,
mm-hmm.
is that as you rescale it, and I'm not, by the way, I should say this was designed by Ed and Dan. It was not designed by me, because I have been banned from designing websites. Have you noticed the way the typography changes size?
Yes, it's a lovely thing.
It is, because it means that if you're on a massive screen and you've got, you know, a widescreen monitor, it scales everything up, which obviously for people like you and me, Marcus, is becoming an increasingly important
really handy
thing.
Yes.
Do you know, even I'm beginning to notice it. I'm just doing that pushing it slightly further away from me thing.
Yeah, I mean, I always think that, but you wear glasses anyway, don't you? You wear glasses for kind of long stuff.
Yeah, I'm short-sighted.
So in theory, your short vision should get better. You should be able to read stuff without glasses.
No, it doesn't work like that.
It does. My wife has to take her glasses off to read stuff up close.
Oh, yeah. Yes, no, I see what you mean. But eventually, both goes.
Oh, yeah, my long will go eventually. Normally when you're about 60-ish.
Yeah.
So it's mid-40s for the... If you're long-sighted like me, you lose your short sight mid-40s and your long sight goes at about 60.
Yeah, well, I swear that I'm beginning to become long-sighted as well as short-sighted.
Okay.
But it might just be because I've surrounded myself with old people such as you and Chris and that it's psychosomatic.
People laugh at my iPhone. They do. They look at it and they go... They just laugh.
You should get an iPhone 6 Plus.
I should, yeah.
You really should. Best bloody phone I've ever had. I absolutely adore it.
There you go.
Anyway, I'm sure we've said that before on
yes,
the show.
Yes,
so basically, if you go, the best thing to do is to try this out for yourself. If you go to boagworld.com and you just rescale the window, you will see how not just the kind of window shifts in size, but actually the size of the typography changes as well. It just is really, really slick. And you can even now, I can't remember, there's a CSS, a new CSS tag. I'll have to look it up for the show notes. That actually allows you to make the typography proportional to the window size. So it can automatically, it's not like you need to set it at every breakpoint, which is what we do on Boag World. But instead, it will actually just scale proportionally to the screen size that you've got available. To, obviously, a minimum size. You don't want it to get ridiculously small.
Mm.
But I absolutely love that. Adapting your typography to your screen is a really, really good idea. Talking of breakpoints, as we just were,
mm-hmm.
don't design for specific breakpoints. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, you know, what's very easy to do is if you've got, I don't know, an Android Galaxy thingamabob or an iPhone or whatever you've got, because that's your kind of your device, what you tend to do in your testing on that device, you tend to go, oh, well, you know, this is the break point, you know, I need to break at the width of my device. But of course, there's so many devices out there now with so many different screen sizes that saying, oh, here's the break point for tablet and here's the break point for mobile is really just a little bit pointless and completely abstract. So what you want to do instead is build the whole site fluid, start to scale it down. And when it kind of hits a point where you're going, oh, this is beginning to look a bit awkward, then add a break point there. Rather than doing it at certain set points.
Yeah.
Does that make sense, Marcus?
It does. You basically make the decision based on content, readability, and layout, I suppose, to a certain extent. But yeah, it's readability. And if images suddenly start to look enormous, well, that's probably a time to change it to a smaller, different layout or something.
Yeah.
Like that. So it's content-based decision rather than screen, you know, what people might consider to be standard screen widths.
Now, you will end up with a hell of a lot more breakpoints as a result, but I don't think that's a problem. You know, if you're coding it well, and especially if you're using, you know, something like SAS or less to code with, you know, really managing multiple breakpoints isn't that big a deal. So it's definitely worth doing. All right, let's come on to our very last suggestion for building responsively. Okay, last but not least is that you need to remember that your mobile layouts need testing too. And I don't mean just testing in terms of, oh, does it look all right in this, you know, when I scale down to this size. I mean, I think we're going to need to be testing more and more, doing usability testing more and more on mobile devices and not just on the desktop version. You know, which I know is going to send up a groan because you're thinking, oh, well, you know, that's even more complicated to do. But I think, you know, we're now living in a world where 50% of a plus of people's page accesses is via mobile devices in many situations. So we need to take it as seriously as we do to the desktop, if not more seriously. And that means doing proper usability testing, which is kind of a big sigh point, isn't it, really? Oh, dear, another thing to deal with. But I think it's kind of essential, really.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. And it's something that even, you know, kind of like I'm hearing you and talking to myself a bit there.
Oh, well, absolutely. You know? We're really quite bad at testing on mobile devices. I'm just interested. I'm checking out because I'm a great fan of using things like usertesting.com. And test anything on the web. Test websites. It looks like see, even services like that, they're testing web based. I don't know whether they offer. Oh, it says you can test mobile apps, so I guess you can test on mobile devices.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you've got no excuse, really.
None
Do
at all.
It.
Yes, Paul.
Yes, get on with it right now. Right. I think that's it, really. I mean, there's loads more I could have put in the list, basically. But there are lots of other people saying really cool things about responsiveness. But I just wanted to kind of get you thinking a little bit beyond those absolute basics of, you know, here's how to build a responsive site in CSS, and get you thinking about some of the kind of usability issues that surround it as well.
Yeah, other considerations.
So, joke.
I have a joke from Ian Lasky.
Oh, we haven't had Ian. I'm glad Ian's still listening to the show.
Well, he did send this not a month ago, a few weeks back, and I think I did one of them, and I've dipped back into his list of jokes. I was walking down the street and got attacked by a high-vis vest and a warning sign. It was health and safety gone mad.
That's really not very good. I don't like that. I much preferred the hipster jokes from last week. They were good.
Anyway, all right, send me more jokes, people.
Yeah, because it doesn't meet my criteria level. Now, don't take it personally, Ian. Most of your jokes are excellent, but that particular one I wasn't so keen on. What was I going to say? Was something I was going to say? Oh, yes, just a reminder again that we're trying to promote the show a little bit, because a lot of people are still under the impression that the show no longer exists. Because we're really good at this marketing business. So I'll put a link in the show notes to a pretty graphic that you can share. Or alternatively, just tell as many people as you can that they should need to be listening to the show. We appreciate your support, etc., etc. Next week's show, I actually know what we're going to be doing next week, Marcus.
That's a rare thing.
I know. And I have no idea what it's going to be and how it's going to work. But next week is a load of people are doing a mental health week where we're looking at all kinds of issues about work-life balance and that kind of stuff. And really the kind of issues about, you know, as a freelancer, the pressures that you're under and, you know, how to actually, you know, live your dream, so to speak. Because a lot of people, you know, set up their own businesses or become freelancers because they go, oh, I want to get away from that terrible boss, or, you know, I want to earn more money or have more holiday. And you end up just working harder with lots of bosses in the form of clients, and you don't get yourself paid as much. So we're going to look at all that kind of stuff next week. Mental health makes it sound a bit kind of hippie-ish and airy-fairy, but I'm hoping it'll be really useful for people, and we're going to delve into that kind of stuff. Also, check out Unfinished Business podcast, because I know they're doing some stuff on it. I know Smashing Magazine are posting some stuff, including something from me on the subject. So it should be a really good show next week, and something a little bit different. So
I've got lots to say on that subject.
I know.
I even wrote a blog post, which is a very rare thing for me, on it once upon a time.
Well, perhaps you ought to write your top 10 tips.
I might do 5.
Okay, if you do 5 and I do 5.
All right, deal.
There we go. So, and we'll see how it goes next week. So join us for that one. In the meantime, have a really great week and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye. We'll be right back.